Kiwi immunologist Professor Gary McLean will be along shortly, but ahead of him, and we'll get his comments on it, ahead of him is a chat we've recorded with the Nobel laureate and Stanford University biophysicist Michael Levitt. He correctly predicted that China would emerge from its epidemic with surprising speed. He reckoned the United States will have a much faster coronavirus recovery than expected, with the same going for other countries. Not as terrible as we think, he told the Los Angeles Times. Certainly his actual modelling for China was eerily accurate with case numbers at the time. But what about his overall conclusion that COVID-19 is causing undue alarm in the world? Professor Levitt received the 2013 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for developing complex models of chemical systems. He doesn't see the coronavirus as being as epochal as most experts do. You are sequestered in Israel right now, I think.
Indeed. And in Israel, we have total lockdown. We're allowed to move 100 meters from our house, which makes one dizzy by exercising because you're going around in circles.
Yes, I can see the frustration in that. The Israelis are faring reasonably well, and so are the Palestinians.
I mean, one number I've been trying to get, and I think it's probably relevant, is just how much seasonal flu there is in Israel. I think it's actually relatively mild. What is it like in New Zealand? Do you have bad seasonal flu?
Yes, but it's a bit early for the full force of it in New Zealand, so we're just heading into winter now.
Yeah, no, I understand. You know, no one really knows a lot about this particular disease. Estimates of its fatality differ by almost 100-fold. There's no real evidence now to show that it's causing massive loss of life. You might dispute that, given the numbers we've seen from Europe and from New York City, but there's information that suggests that overall, even including all the deaths from coronavirus and COVID-19, it actually has not been a particularly bad year. And the reason for this is that certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, flu in this past winter was almost completely absent. So in some ways, the COVID-19 deaths are essentially making up for this. And that actually makes some sense because, like COVID, flu also tends to be worst for people who are over 65 or 70. And you could say that because there was not a serious flu season this year, a lot of frail people are still alive. And they're obviously the first target for coronavirus. I think there are a lot of issues here. Let me listen to some of your questions before going into them more deeply.
Okay. Back in February, you analysed data from 78 countries, and you were bang on at the time with China. But at that stage, the US had only 600 or so deaths, and of course now it's got 30-odd thousand. I'm not sure you were expecting the severity in the US.
In the USA, which is a very large country, there were a lot of deaths. Let me just say that in the USA, there are almost 3 million deaths a year, natural deaths. So 30,000 is about 4 days of natural death. I mean, it sounds like a huge, huge number, but people who see these numbers as being very large have forgotten that people do die. We don't really know whether the coronavirus deaths are instead of other deaths or additional deaths. The people who are dying of coronavirus generally are people who are at risk of dying anyway.
I understand that point of view, and it's shared by a number of people. But when you look at Spain and France and Italy especially, you know, you do start to see the health system under siege and almost a state of terror, especially in Italy.
In Italy, there are 1,700 natural deaths a day without taking COVID into account. Still something like 15 days of natural death. Now, in the world, every day, 150,000 people die. I'm still not completely sure. I think what will be the key determinant is when we get the weekly death numbers from all of the countries very affected, and then actually ask, okay, well, exactly how much was the excess? And I'm sure that in Italy, there has been an excess, but I'm not sure that that excess is much higher than they would have been from the natural flu season had it been a severe SA 2018. Now, 2018 resulted in something like 150,000 excess deaths in Europe, but no one paid any attention to it. And I think the big difference between COVID and influenza is that doctors, by and large, are immune to influenza. They take their vaccinations as they should do. And therefore, the group that is borne the biggest burden from corona are the medical professionals. I mean, a number of them have died. Quite a large number have become ill. And that's because they've had to deal with these patients also under conditions of great pressure. You know, it's still too soon to be sure. But the fact that so many countries have now succeeded in controlling the epidemics suggests to me that, you know, this is not a very, very serious threat. I think the ensuing panic and the political turmoil are all very much more serious panics than the actual burden of death.
Two obvious points to make, though, in riposte to that are the death rate, which people seem to have settled on at around about 1.4, or say 1 to 1.4, which would make it 10 times deadlier than the flu without a vaccine.
What you're saying here is the case fatality ratio. It's the first time that the diagnosis has been by the presence of viral RNA on the person. There's now lots of evidence that for every symptomatic case, there might be as many as 10 asymptomatic cases. So I think that using the case fatality ratio is a very, very dangerous thing. If you look at Germany, for example, they have a much lower ratio. Certainly, my estimates very early on, and that I included in all my reports, was that the most well-defined epidemic so far has been China, excluding Hubei, the province where it all happened. There were about 120 deaths in China from people who had left Hubei, and they were all very heavily controlled. And there, the death rate is 0.84%. But I still think it depends how you define the case. I think there's evidence now that if you check for coronavirus in places like New York or Germany, 15% of the population have coronavirus. So if you, instead of thinking about cases, think about population fatality rates, they are either five times less than flu or three times higher than flu. And, you know, so in some ways, we don't yet know that. No one really knows enough about the virus to know what level of infection you need to have herd immunity. You know, I've been looking at this whole question of saying, well, let's imagine we have to let this thing burn itself out. We don't have a vaccine. How many people would die until we had something like enough herd immunity to protect us? In some ways, COVID is a little bit nicer than influenza, not as a disease. It's an awful disease, as is influenza. But influenza tends to also kill younger people. I think something like 25% of the influenza deaths are people under 70, whereas for COVID, it looks like only 10% are. So we don't know yet. And I think the answers will be coming very soon with the antibody testing. It's going to be very interesting to look back on this 6 months and a year from now. And we'll probably say, how could we have been so fooled? Because there's been a lot of very, very irresponsible reporting, even in so-called high-quality journals like the New York Times. I saw an article there where they basically said that coronavirus was going to kill as many people as have been killed in Vietnam, the Korean War, and something else. And of course, the number might be the same, but a person dying over the age of 80 is not the same as a soldier dying at the age of 20. And statisticians know this. Economists know this. There's a very simple measure called years of life lost, where basically if you die after the life expectancy for your country, that doesn't count. And let's say your life expectancy is 80 and you die at the age of 75, that costs 5 years. But if you die at the age of 20, it costs 60 years. But it seems to me that just out of a sense of fairness, we have to rank the life of the unfulfilled life has been worth more than a very full life. Otherwise, we will have no progress. The key question is going to be, in the calendar, in the 12 months, say from 6 weeks from now, let's just say 1st of June. So if we go back 12 months and ask, what are the total number of deaths in the world in that period? Is it significantly larger than it was in previous years? And I don't know, but I would not be surprised if the excess was very, very small. It could be that I'm wrong, but not having immunity to coronavirus is not a good thing. Let's just see. I think that it's been very gratifying. For example, I was actually born in South Africa. And in South Africa, there's actually been a negative death rate from coronavirus because of all the murders that didn't happen. Just simply counting deaths is not the way to do this. You need to think about exactly who is dying.
But in terms of the governments needing to act on public health advice, with the coronavirus, you can't afford to be wrong, can you? Especially without a vaccine. So you would understand how the world's trying to deal with this and lock everything down.
What is the population of New Zealand? Is it 10 million? I have no idea. How big is your country?
It's getting towards 5.
Okay. So, for 5 million, you probably have 60 yesterday. So I could tell you there's going to be 50 deaths a day from coronavirus and everyone would get really scared and you would take all these measures. So far, we don't yet know. It's not clear to me that total lockdown is needed or even desirable. So I think I'm not saying it's not desirable. There's no doubt that if you had total complete lockdown and nobody was allowed to move, you would get rid of the virus. Maybe health professionals would recommend that. But, you're also doing a huge amount of psychological damage. Children, panic attacks are enormously common now. I have family members who are suffering greatly from this. And then, of course, the economic toll. So, and again, if your country's wealth drops by 1%, then the poor people in the country feel 10%. The rich people feel nothing.
In terms of figures, you see, I've got a few in my head because once you hear enough people talk about this, you remember a few of them. The current flu season in the United States, I saw one prediction, I think it was out of the CDC, that 60-odd thousand people might die of the flu. The coronavirus projections in the United States, between 60 but maybe 240,000 people. And in New Zealand, we have had bad case, worst case death scenarios of 100,000 down to 27,000. So obviously, people are guessing to a certain extent, or modellers are disagreeing. It's very hard for the layperson, even listening to a Nobel laureate like you, to know exactly what ground they're standing on and how scared they should be.
I agree. I think it is a very difficult issue. Try to get life insurance when you're 90 years old. I mean, the people who do the numbers realize this very, very clearly. I think it's the age, so I'm 73, I have a 0.5% chance of dying every month. So based against that, a 0.5% chance of coronavirus doesn't make too much effect on me. A lot of medical professionals are not prepared to say that somebody who is, paralyzed, has Alzheimer, who dies at the age of 90, is less bad than a child dying at the age of 10. We have been primed here for panic. The modeling estimates are incredibly long. Look what happened in England and the United States. The premier modeling group out of Imperial College stated very clearly that they expected 2 million deaths in the United States and 500,000 deaths in the United Kingdom. And then a few weeks later, they revised that to say, oh, no, we actually meant 20,000. Well, maybe every single year at flu season, we need to go into lockdown. It would certainly save the same number of lives that Corona has cost. I mean, would you think that's a good idea?
No, because we have a flu vaccine.
Even with the flu vaccine, we still have all these deaths.
And the cost-benefit analysis ruler is always run over health decisions. And cancer and heart disease will outstrip, I think, even the worst-case coronavirus scenarios, deaths from in the United States this year. So you can do that set of sums, and you can do other sets of sums. You talked about 15% of a given population providing herd immunity. I saw a figure of 85%.
We don't know.
As you say, time will tell if you are right or you are wrong, and if all the public health physicians and epidemiologists are right and or if they're wrong. And how soon before we know? You think only a few months, yeah? Just finally?
I think even less. I think as soon as we get, you know, with the antibody testing, all we need is to test 1,000 people chosen truly randomly. But I'm also prepared to make another prophecy. All the epidemiologists will claim they were right all along, and because they scared us so much, this whole thing went away. We'll see. Anyway.
We'll see. Well, thank you for giving us your time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.